This is the one set at 67 kilometers an hour.
On a train bound for Stockholm.
There's a golem.
Sort of.
An evil alien artist.
And a headhunter on horseback.
There's art theft aplenty.
And a parallel dimension in a diamond.
Not really. It's called Grand Theft Cosmos.
Here we go!
Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're in Tarmadark, Daleks, Spacetime, and Glam Rock.
Starlet phones are awful, that's the TARDIS way.
We're a punk in a Mary's Kane.
That's Kane with a K. Who back when? Reviewing all the poo there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook, even those are gobbledygook. We'll review them all, you see, so join us on this odyssey. It's Who Back When? Who Back When?
Welcome to episode A011 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. Today we'll be reviewing Grand Theft Cosmos by Eddie Robson. I'm JD, and joining me tonight is Ponkin.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am totally rad-tastic. How are you doing?
I'm fine. If this hadn't been the 10th time we have tried the intro for this episode, I would be even better.
Yeah, wait till Christmas and consult the blooper reel for an accurate reference to that.
So, yes, Grand Theft Cosmos. Spoilers, it's better than Sobek.
Oh, it is much better than Sobek. Much better.
You know, this is the 11th, and apart from the very end of the last season, we seem to be going, you know, it's the Star Trek original series film sequence, which is bad, good, bad, good, bad.
Is that actually true, though? Is that actually true?
What, of the Star Trek films?
Yeah.
Or the audiobooks? In the Star Trek films?
I'm thinking Star Trek films.
Absolutely. You've got motion picture, which
you have
is hideous.
Yeah, the motionless picture, which is incredibly boring.
You've got Khan!
Which is amazing. Search for Spock, which is not bad, I was going to say.
Oh, at all.
Voyage Home, which is grandiose.
Which is funny.
The fifth one that shall not be named. Underscored Country, amazing. Generation shit.
Yeah.
That's it, actually. Yeah. Okay, so with the exception of... Oh, fuck it, this isn't a Star Trek podcast. Let's get back to Doctor Who.
Yeah, we tangentialized there. Mm-hmm. Yes, so Grand Theft Cosmos. It is by Eddie Robson. Now,
ooh.
Eddie Robson, we love and hate in equal measure.
Okay, what has he done?
He's done our favorite episode and the consensus least favorite episode so far.
Okay.
He wrote Phobos.
Okay.
And Human Resources.
Oh!
So, you know, this will be the tiebreaker for how good Eddie Robson is, or how bad Eddie Robson is.
That's really weird.
What, that he could do both Phobos and Human Resources?
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess...
Nothing happens in Phobos, and everything happens in Human Resources.
Yeah, but also Phobos was a terribly poorly crafted story.
Yes.
Yeah. Then again, you know, I guess human beings can write poetry and go to the toilet. We still respect them, right? That's fine. Okay, yeah, keep going. I'm so high on caffeine, I apologize. Here we go, shall we launch into the B-Scout?
We open on the Doc and Lucy racing towards Stockholm, that's Stockholm, Sweden, on a train in the early 20th century.
Also aboard the train is Mr. Simonson, His Royal Highness King Oscar's personal art dealer, who is transporting to His Royal Highness the Black Diamond, a precious work of art by esteemed Italian artist Claudio Tardelli.
It turns out, however, that the Black Diamond ain't a diamond, nor is Tardelli an Italian.
And the diamond that isn't a diamond is also not authentic, but a facsimile.
And Tardelli isn't in fact human. He's an alien, and the black what's it is of literal astronomical value.
Especially to two thieves who are about to steal it, namely the headhunter and Karen of Human Resources fame.
So while they steal the facsimile of the not diamond, Doc and Lucy now have to steal the real diamond.
Which also isn't a real diamond.
First.
And that concludes the B-Scout for this episode. Shall we launch into the episode itself?
Doc and Lucy are on a train.
Yeah.
And the Doc is doing his Max Warp thing of just geeking out completely.
Oh, holy shit, totally. It's actually, normally you don't get cross-episode references this close to each other, I feel.
No, but he, in Max Warp, he was doing it over the really nice spaceships. This time he's doing it on the Murder on the Orient Express train.
Yeah,
you
essentially.
Know.
Yeah.
You know,
where are they travelling from, by the way?
I have no idea. And neither does Lucy. Frankly, Lucy's bored.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to be here. You know, it's 1898. It is a train through probably snow-covered landscape. and you've got, you know, Victoriana everywhere. You've probably got a dining car where there's silver service. I would love to be here. And what did Lucy want? Lucy wants to listen to her MP3 player, yeah, which she shouldn't listen to anyway, because we know from Horror of Glam Rock, it's got an evil alien on it.
Oh, that's true. I completely blocked that out of my mind. Thank you for bringing that ghost back to haunt me.
Why don't you go and re-listen to Horror of Glam Rock just to remind yourself?
Thanks. Yeah, I might just do that. Gotta say, the Doctor here goes, he basically goes, listen, Lucy, you've seen Star Trek. There's such a thing as the Prime Directive. You can't listen to your MP3 in front of all these people. And did you say 1898, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, in that case, I apologize for the early 20th century reference in the B-Scout. It is late 19th century. Does not matter. I want to put a pin in this. I want to put a pin in the Doctor's Prime Directive reference.
Oh, because he does what the Doctor always does. He says one thing and does completely another later on. But we'll come back to that.
Yeah, spoiler alert. All right, so.
So Lucy decides to go and start wandering around the train.
And we get a little cutscene.
Yeah, to a female voice who isn't played by Catriona Olsen.
Wait, what? I didn't even know there was such a thing.
It's the only one.
Yeah. With the exception of Lucy. So this female character, what's her face for now? Because we don't actually know who she is yet. She is stealing something from a guard aboard this train. And then we cut back to Doctor, and he is talking to, in my notes I've got him down as Mr. Awful Swedish Accent. He is talking to a guy named Simonson, which the way they pronounce it in the episode sounds like it's spelled S-E-N, which would make it either Norwegian or Danish, but not Swedish.
As someone who is British, I have no idea about that. Do you happen to, you know, have lived in one of these countries by any chance?
Yes, I was born and raised in Stockholm. Imagine my surprise when they suddenly drop Stockholm into the mix in this episode. It's like, oh, that's freaking amazing. I am looking forward to this. Fret not, I'm not going to make lots of references to how inaccurate whatever stuff is. However, seriously, Simonson, dude, you're Danish, right? Okay. Anyway, keep going.
So yeah, the doc is having a very pleasant conversation, and they're talking about, you know, is it the first time you've been on an electrified railway?
Ooh.
You know, because we're coming from the age of steam at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the train rides that would have been going on at this time would have been steam engines, the sort of, as I said earlier, the Orient Express sort of style.
Yeah.
The Doc and Simonson get on very, very well. They're talking art. They're talking about plays. It is a nice, pleasant conversation that you would have sitting next to someone on a train.
Yeah, and not just anyone, someone who is reasonably intellectual and cultured. It turns out Simonson is the official, I guess, dealer or art purchaser for the Royal Court, or for King Oscar. And he is on this train transporting two objects in particular to the Royal Galleries, namely something called the Black Diamond. Do we actually find out right now what it is?
I don't think it's quite yet.
Okay, no. Apologies. He is transporting something to this dude, the king, and... Sorry, Oscar. What we do find out, though, is that they are precious works of art by the esteemed Italian artist Claudio Tardelli.
When he mentions Claudio Tardelli, the Doctor seems to be a bit wary or astonished.
Hmm.
We don't know quite which at this point, mainly because Claudio Tardelli, his work is very rare.
Yeah, and sort of before its time in a way.
And Simonson says that he likes Tardelli's work and he plans to get as much Tardelli into his life as possible.
Yeah, and around this time, I'm not sure if it was before, if it's after, if it's mid-conversation, we get a little bit of a cutscene of what's going on with Lucy on another part of the train, because Lucy is bumping into What's-Her-Face, who just robbed that guard. And it turns out, who's What's-Her-Face?
Karen.
Yeah.
From Human Resources.
Yeah, Karen, the girl who isn't Lucy.
And who isn't dead.
And who is destined to become some kind of... No, not destined necessarily, but who was at least destined to become some sort of weird future galactic Mussolini.
But unfortunately, Karen and Lucy have only a very short conversation because she runs off.
So now, cut back to Doc and Simonson being alerted by a guard to the theft that just occurred. And then we cut back to Lucy.
Or we would cut back to Lucy, but, you know, considering the guard is only in this point, this is my only point of really getting into who this guard is.
Okay, oh, dude, go for it.
Well, the guard has a name. So it's a named character, so therefore it must be important in some way, or played by someone important. In this case, played by someone important.
Oh.
Henrik, the guard.
Yeah.
He's played by a guy called Colin Spall.
Okay.
Spall? Spall.
Oh, wow. Okay. Related to Timothy Spall?
I I have no idea.
Okay, Timothy Spall. I want to say Timothy.
It's not Timothy Spall. It's no. Colin Spall. Oh no, I know who you mean. I don't know if he's related to but Colin Spall does have a number of prior Doctor Who connections. In fact, two.
Ooh. Okay.
In New Who, played Mr. Crane in Rise of the Cyberman and the Age of Steel.
Oh.
And
wow.
In Classic Who, he played Security Chief Lilt in the sixth Doctor story, Revelation of the Daleks. So he's been in Classic Who and New Who, and now the Audio Adventures.
That's pretty freaking amazing.
So, yeah, that is Henrik. But now we jump back to Lucy Miller.
Yeah.
Who is chasing after Karen.
Yeah, yeah. And she does catch up with What's-Her-Face, Karen. But not just Karen. Also, the Headhunter.
Now, the Headhunter is played by someone called Catriona Olsen.
Never heard of her.
Catriona Olsen and Louise Fullerton, who plays Karen, were in an audiobook called Human Resources.
Would we review that?
I think we've reviewed it. Catriona Olsen is also in every Big Finish play ever made.
Yeah, exactly. I gotta say, you got a big heart, dude, for including that for all the listeners who are literally just tuning in and this is their first episode. Yeah. We're gonna be name dropping Catriona Olsen in every single audiobook review.
Because she's in every audiobook ever made. It's like in
also, thank you for tuning in, by the way.
Yes,
wise choice.
Back when.
Yeah.
there is a cult TV show called Sapphire and Steel. Yeah. It was with Joanna Lumley and David McCallum. And the first one is about photographs of infinity. And at the end of the story, spoilers, they trap a creature called the Shape in every single photograph ever made.
Oh, wow.
It's been in since the very beginning of photography. It is in every photograph ever made. It's something behind the wall. It is something looking in the far distance at the vanishing point. It is in every photograph ever made. That's Catriona Olsen. She's in every audiobook, even when you can't hear, even when you can't hear her. She's in the studio. She's there being disapproving of someone else playing a female role. I'm amazed she allowed Louise Fullerton to play Karen. She could have been Headhunter and Karen.
She totally could have been, by the way. But yeah, that's very true.
So the Headhunter is on a horseback, literally going along sort of cowboys and Indian style alongside the train as Karen opens the door.
Karen jumps. Yeah, onto the horse as well. They ride off into the distance. Kablamatron. Let's cut back to Simonson and Doc, because Simonson at this point is admitting to the Doc that, you know what, don't worry about it. What was stolen was just a decoy. It wasn't the actual thing.
And the Doc asks a very stupid question of, well, where's the real thing?
Yeah.
And Simonson goes, well, I'm not going to tell you. I met you 15 minutes ago, and you've been to all that you've been doing for the past 15 minutes is talking about Tardelli's artwork, so why would I tell you?
Yeah, pretty suspicious. But what he does do is he shows the Doc a few, like, photo reproductions, a few photos of Tardelli's work, just to, which he had to essentially show the seller of these two artifacts. And I think it's now that we find out properly what those two artifacts are, to show that seller that he is seriously committed to collecting all of Tardelli's work. Now, these two artifacts that he was transporting, the two things, one of which What's-Her-Face just stole, they are the so-called black diamond, which is not a diamond, but it's a black rock, and a statue of some description.
And it is, the Doctor is quite astonished at this, because, you know, he doesn't think many of these things exist. He said that, you know, Tardelli, you know, didn't used to paint classical scenes, and there's a picture of, you know, a typical sort of classical historical scene. And the next one is a homage to Botticelli, and then there's a sort of abstract sculpture. And, you know, this was before the abstract sort of art movement came in.
Yeah.
And so the Doctor inadvertently creates the word abstraction. Or abstract art, which is told to an art dealer who will probably go and spread it, therefore predestinating history.
Well done.
Nice one, Doc.
Yeah. Prime Directive, I believe, was coughed up at some point in this episode. Anyway, blammo.
Meanwhile, Butch Cassidy and the Headhunter are on horseback. Karen is a little bit pissed off because she doesn't like horses and says, next time, you know, can we please do it after the invention of the motorbike?
Around this point, the Headhunter realizes, she gets to look at the Black Diamond, realizes that it is in fact fake. So, plan B. Now they have to go and steal the real thing. Cut back to Lucy and Doc. because now they are reunited again. And Lucy tells him the whole thing. She explains it was What's-Her-Face, she explains that it wasn't just What's-Her-Face, it was also the other chick, and they rode off on a horse, and now the doc tells her all about Tardelli. He was not human, he was an alien, and somehow his works of art warped the fabric of reality. I think that's a direct quote.
What he was doing was trying to gain influence over the Pope.
Yeah, exactly. They met up sometime in, like, Renaissance Italy.
This is the plot of the Time Meddler.
It is! Oh my god, it's totally Time Meddler.
You know, there is this alien gaining influence over
politics
or religion, as it was in Time Meddler and here.
Yeah, true.
And the Doctor discredited him, which is the same as in Time Meddler.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. So the Doctor has been going around destroying these works of art because they warp reality. They warp people's perceptions.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit wary that King Oscar of Sweden...
Beautiful pronunciation.
I am Swedish. Yes, so normally my accents don't offend anyone, but...
I'm in no way offended. I'm not Swedish, as you can tell from my blonde hair and blue eyes and broad shoulders, but...
That is some really good filtering you've got on the webcam.
Yeah. But I am from Sweden, and thus not at all offended. Please do your best Muppet-esque impersonation.
You've ruined it now.
No, I apologize.
But, so, the king, King Oscar, now I'm quite knowledgeable about cult television. I'm also not very knowledgeable about history. King Oscar's a real person.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. He apparently, according to this audiobook, and Ponkin will be able to correct me if the audiobook is wrong, that he was thought of as being an art critic, a fair and just art critic.
I don't know about fair and just, but he certainly was a patron of the arts. He was very much into, if I'm not mistaken, not just art, but poetry. I think he wrote his own poetry, in fact.
Anyway, so Lucy says, well, you know, Karen and Katriana haven't stolen the painting. It wasn't what they had was too small to be a painting. But, and the Doctor says, right, we cannot allow the Black Diamond to fall into the headhunter's hands, so we have to go and steal it. So now we've got two groups of people trying to steal one Black Diamond.
Which isn't a diamond.
Which isn't a diamond.
Cut to Stockholm.
The Doc is there at the Swedish chef's palace. And
they're practically casing the joint.
Yeah. And he says that he can't just pop into the TARDIS and go inside because it will attract noise. It has never stopped him before.
No. And ever. He has already started to F with history. So, in my opinion, he might as well. The consequences of popping into the palace in his TARDIS would be minuscule compared to what the artwork itself might do to history, right? And as Doctor Who has taught us, if you turn up in a historical context in a TARDIS and you then dematerialize again, every character that sees this happen will go, let's never speak of this again.
And you can't change history. Not one single line. I live by the code of Barbara.
Anyway.
Sadly, the Doctor starts altering history.
Yeah, but they are not the only people who are casing the joint. The Headhunter and What's-Her-Face are also casing the joint. And their plan somehow involves a guard that we are about to meet. And you gotta say, the first time, like, the Headhunter is going like, oh, what about going there? And What's-Her-Face goes, oh, I'm not so sure. What about going there? Oh, I'm not so sure. And then when the Headhunter goes, what about maybe chatting up that guard? What's-Her-Face basically goes, mega randy. She just goes, oh, I'm so pleased to hear about this plan. This is fantastic. This big, schlong Swedish palace guard. Yeah, I'd happily go along with that plan.
Meanwhile, Lucy...
Yeah. ...is delivering a fake Swedish accent that is so incredibly bad. Don't take any offense. In fact, rivals yours.
Thank you. yes. So she puts on... I didn't think she was doing a Swedish accent. I didn't think Lucy was meant to be doing a Swedish accent. I thought she was doing some sort of
she calls it a
London accent.
Is it a London accent? Really? That she does say she's been putting on her posh voice later on.
Oh, sir, I have seen this rapscallion, and someone wishes to rob me. Would you please protect me?
Is that really how she puts it? As in, is that really the pronunciation, the accent that she affects?
Well, I can't do a Cockney accent doing... Sorry, a... Actually, I should be able to because Sheridan Smith's from up north, I think. So, doing a Liverpudlian, doing a Cockney accent, doing a...
Potentially posh London accent.
Yeah, God knows.
I don't know. I'm not... At first, I was completely convinced that she was doing a Swedish accent, but later on... spoiler alert, the Doctor's going to turn up and he's like her English guardian. So apparently she is meant to sound English, but her voice is oscillating so much, she might as well be appearing in like a Cher video.
Meanwhile, Karen and Katriana are watching this and they're a little bit pissed off because their plan was to do exactly what Lucy Miller's doing. And, but the headhunter says, no, this is ideal. Let's move on. Skip to Lucy.
Who is sitting in a restaurant.
With Anders.
Yeah. And Anders is revealing practically everything about his job and about the Black Diamond and about his whereabouts and about everything that could possibly be considered top secret.
Yes, I am protecting the Black Diamond and I protect the king and... Yes, the Black Diamond is very small. It could be easily stolen. In fact, it's already been an attempt. But it's not a diamond.
But it is very important to do this job thoroughly because it is a very important job working for the king and protecting all the people. Totally. Hang on.
Oh, and here's Lord Smythe, my guardian. As the foppish English gentleman Lord Darcy turns up in the form of the Doctor. Lucy claims that, that this guard was just protecting her because, you know, she'd gone a bit weird to the palace. And then the Doctor turns around and basically, you know, says, young man, what are your intentions towards Lucy? And the guard goes off.
Yeah, it's not towards Lucy. What she has an alias. She's picked her alias. It is Miss Palmer Tompkinson.
Poor Lucy.
That's fantastic.
And then she goes back to her normal voice and says, you know, she's been doing her best posh voice now for, you know, a couple of hours and she's really fed up.
Yeah. Sorry it came out sounding half Swedish, half Dutch.
But the Royal Guard, Anders, is played by Sebastian Armestio.
Ooh, and who is he?
He's only had one small part. He was actually in the episode Bad Wolf.
Oh, right, okay. That's not a bad episode to appear in.
No, it is an incredibly small part, but at least he does, you know, he has had a part that we can screen capture. Which you will be able to see on whobagwhen.com.
Damn right.
So anyway, the guard, who was in Bad Wolf, is now approached by Karen. And the headhunter does what the headhunter does whenever she turns up.
She beats the shit out of him.
You know, and Karen goes, why didn't you just use some chloroform on him? And the headhunter, in the perfect way that Katriana Olsen says it is, actually, I think it is so awesome. I think we deserve a soundbite of Katriana Olsen there.
Yeah?
What do you think? Soundbite?
Soundbite.
Soundbite.
Why don't you use that stuff that you put on a hanky and hold over someone's mouth?
Because a good whack over the head is easier, more reliable, and above all, cheaper.
There we go.
Classic.
So, classic headhunter. So anyway, back to the Doc and Lucy, who are, now they figure out that the diamond isn't really a diamond. And, you know, we knew it wasn't a diamond, but now it's not actually a diamond, even though it isn't a diamond.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out why the headhunter wants it and what it actually is.
Yeah. He also manages to name drop Robin Hood into the whole thing, because when we cut back to them, they are essentially chin-chinaroonie and cheesing to a crime. And he goes, well, you know what, it isn't technically crime, like even though we're stealing something, it's not criminal, there are good acts of crime out there. By the way, Robin Hood totally knew him. And it's like, oh, that was pretty good, I liked it, it was a nice reference.
And then we get my favourite scene in the episode. The headhunter has hypnotised the guard.
Yeah.
Brilliantly.
It is fantastic.
And she has a mind probe. And this mind probe has lots of different settings. And you can change the response. And you can set control phrases. And
like confirmation phrases. The standard being, I obey. But to demonstrate the flexibility of her mind probe to Miss Mega Horny, what does she get Anders to say instead?
I don't know. What does she get Anders to say? I think it's better coming from you, this one.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Cream cheese.
It just sounds better.
Thanks.
And then she sets the trigger word to be Elvis Presley, who was born for another 40 years.
Yeah.
It's a great, brilliant scene, because it is in this episode, which is quite a funny episode, you know, science fiction, but this is purely done almost for laughs. And it does actually show that, as reoccurring villains go, these are actually quite good. I'd like them to stay around.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, so that's Evil Team Number 1.
Yes, that is Evil Team Number 1. What do you reckon? Before moving on to Evil Team Number 2, do you think maybe we should pop in a little word from our sponsors?
Yes, I think we should go to a word from our sponsors.
This episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast, is brought to you by Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. Do you suffer from toothaches, backache, stomach cramps, the flu, noisy neighbours, or an unhealthy working relationship with your line manager? Well, don't worry, buddy. Who Back When is going to sort you right out. Now, I'm not going to tell you about the myriad Doctor Who audiobook reviews that we've done, or even about our classic Who reviews that are going back on the air very soon, or even about the freaking kick-ass new Who reviews that we just started doing. What's the point? You're listening to our podcast right now. I'd literally be wasting your time and getting you all riled up over something you already know as well as I do. No need for me to spray tank the Who Back When podcast logo onto the fourth wall, Nespa. Correctamundo. What I will say is this, though. If you like the show, then please tell the world. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Subscribe to, rate, and review us on iTunes. And hit us up with a follow and a high five on Twitter. He's at Marius Kane, that's Kane with a K. And I'm at Ponkin. You know how to spell that, and if you don't, just guess. So, I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you hate backaches, that's something you and I have in common, amigo. So say no to backaches with Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. Okie dokie. Now on with the show.
And we're back.
We are contractually now obliged to do that. Otherwise, we don't get our sponsorship from whobagwhen.com. I told you last week they lock me in a basement and make me tell them Doctor Who facts every day. Please release me. Evil Team Number 2, meanwhile.
Yeah.
Have their own gadget.
Yeah, and they're testing it out. Essentially, what this gadget is, imagine every single heist movie set in the present day, where they will create this feedback loop on the CCTV so that the guards monitoring the CCTV screens always see the one empty corridor over and over and over again. This gadget does that to your brain.
Yes, it's a someone else's problem field. It's brilliantly done, because the Doctor, of course, wouldn't have anything as de rigueur as, you know, putting something in front of a video camera. No, he has to do it to someone's brain.
Yeah. Also, they don't have CCTV cameras just yet.
Do you know, that's a very good point. Anyway.
Anyway.
We head across to Simonson now.
Yeah.
And Simonson meets up with Lucy Miller,
aka Miss Palmer Tomkinson,
and basically she says that she, you know, she's here to sell him something.
Yeah,
and what's she here to sell?
Oh, Jesus balls! It's the TARDIS. I don't know about you. I listened to this story a good few times, by the way, this audiobook. The first time I listened to it, my stomach tied itself in a knot. I was thinking, no, don't, like, volunteer the TARDIS to someone else. You can't do that. Also, what the fuck are you talking about? The Prime Directive? Are you actually going to show someone from 1898 the inside of the TARDIS? Because, spoiler alert, that is exactly what's about to happen. In fact, sorry, hang on, I'm cutting you off. What the shit? We put a pin in this in the beginning of the episode. Lucy is not allowed to flaunt an MP3 player on a train. She is allowed to open up the TARDIS doors and show someone of influence the inside of it. That's crazy, man.
And bear in mind that we have... This is now the steampunk gothic TARDIS interior from the Doctor Who movie. It isn't the very small white, you know, room, which is barely bigger than the police box from classic Who.
No, exactly.
This is humongous. It's a cathedral.
Yeah, it's palatial. And actually quite befitting a first view by someone who works in the Royal Palace. But still, this someone is from an age where being on a train that isn't driven by steam is revolutionary.
You know, there was a time when the Doctor didn't want anyone in the TARDIS that was not a companion, i.e. Hartnell.
Yeah.
Troughton. And basically everything in it. By the time it gets to Davison, he just plonks people in willy-nilly. Black Orchid, he just grabs a whole load of people in and transports them, you know, grabs a police officer, transports him across Surrey. Okay. You know, he's just grabbing people left, right and centre. And in New Who, he does it all the time. But the Doctor normally tries not to let people inside the TARDIS because of what he says to Barbara and Ian and Susan right back in Unearthly Child, which is they've seen the ship. They will know that this is possible. And then we'll go and try and make one, basically. It's prime directive all over again.
In this case, no problem.
Come inside. Come
to you, Mr. Simonson.
The great optical illusion that is a TARDIS.
Yeah, anyway, great. So Simonson obviously goes, I'm going to buy this.
Give me some money.
Yeah. I'm buying this. Sold. Yeah. And then we cut back to the headhunter. Wait, hang on, sorry. First, Simonson agrees to pop the TARDIS inside the vault.
Because it's incredibly valuable and Lucy doesn't want it stolen. And Simonson just goes, yeah, right, let's go, because he wants it.
Yeah, totally fine, no problemo. Now we cut to the headhunter.
And she is fake pissed at the guard outside the palace when she turns up. Because he said, well, King's not here. And she goes, don't you know who I am? I am Elizabeth of Bohemia, and I am here to see the king.
Beautiful.
Take my bag.
Is this God Anders, by the way?
I don't think this is Anders.
Okay,
no,
right.
I think this is a different generic guard.
All right.
Meanwhile, the headhunter completely gets inside, and Lucy and the doc on the walkie-talkies.
Yeah, exactly.
Turn around and go, right, he's in the vault. Because the doctor is...
Inside the TARDIS. Yeah, and he's about to steal the paintings, but the statue is going to be slightly more difficult. What he says is, I think he's going to dematerialize and then rematerialize around the statue because it's just too big and heavy.
Gone are the days when the Doctor couldn't pilot the TARDIS.
Yeah, and then we just blammo cut to another radio call twixt the headhunter and what's-her-face, who is on the roof. Now, in my notes, roof is followed by 3 question marks and 5 exclamation marks, all mixed up together, because what the shit is what's-her-face doing on the roof?
Well, yeah, but even the headhunter is saying this, because it's a case of, hold on, you're meant to be going to the cellar, why the hell are you on the roof?
Yeah, are you holding the map upside down or something along those lines?
This is the most dysfunctional team since Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, but why is she on the roof? How did she get on the roof? This is the royal palace. Like, there is more than just one dude named Anders who is hypnotized guarding this place. Getting up on the roof is quite a feat. In fact, I dare say you have to get inside the palace and go up to the roof from the interior.
You see, I agree with you. I have no idea how she got up there.
There's not a fucking ladder on the side of it.
I assumed that she used the headhunter spaceship, the smart car. The smart car from Human Resources.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, that is possible.
Because it wouldn't help them get in the building, but it would help them get to the building.
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway, Lucy Palmer Tomkinson is
she's
inside
leaving.
The palace now.
Yeah, but she's also leaving Mr. Simonson. And as she is leaving, Elizabeth of Bohemia, quote-unquote, is arriving.
Yeah, and Lucy and the headhunter basically meet.
Yeah,
for the first time.
So freaking weird. It's totally weird, because they're both they're essentially furthering each other's alibis by not doing anything. They meet up, they look at each other scornfully, and then Lucy just absconds. And I want to put a pin in this as well, because I've got approximately 72 question marks coming up in a couple of paragraphs. But Lucy basically just absconds, and fake Elizabeth of Bohemia just tells Simonson, yeah, she's actually of lower social standing than her family purports to be. What? You could totally out each other at this point.
Yeah, but I think they're both thinking the same thing. If I out you, you'll out me, and we're both stuffed. I think that's more the problem.
Okay.
It's mutually assured destruction at this point, if they start outing one another.
Okay, you know what? That's possible, but... I reckon, from Lucy's point of view, she thinks that the problem is already solved. The Doctor's already in the vault, he can nick everything that he needs to steal, and then he can just dematerialize, no problem whatsoever. She doesn't have to say anything, because, as far as she's concerned, the headhunter is there to steal something that they've already stolen. But from the headhunter's point of view, all she really has to say is, oh my goodness, you are that imposter who turned up in my palace and tried to steal my stuff with some fake artifact that you tried to sell me and blah blah. And then... Kablamatron, Lucy's gonna be completely up shit creek.
There is something else here, though.
Okay.
You're right, but...
I love the sound of that.
You are right.
Oh, man, it gets better.
But...
Shit.
We know from human resources that while the headhunter has her own plans, she's not actually malicious. You know, she wants it. And she might think that if Lucy gets this thing, then they could do a deal. Or the chances of one of them getting it is fine. And don't forget, Lucy and the headhunter really don't have that much animosity after the end of Human Resources. It was the headhunter helped come up with the resolution to the episode. She wasn't a bad guy in it. She was morally flexible.
But she is morally flexible to the point where she will bludgeon people and brainwash them and whatnot.
And shoot them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But her and Lucy are not... I think her and Lucy just have this weird friendship.
Okay. Okay.
You know, Lucy and the headhunter have been trying... Well, the headhunter has been following Lucy since the start of the EDAs. And I think the headhunter likes Lucy.
Okay. In a way, I think your point is actually proven, spoiler alert, at the end of this episode, now that I think of it.
But okay, let's not spoil it just yet. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
So.
We blammo cut again.
Yeah, so the Doctor and Lucy have yet another head-to-head conversation.
Yeah, because the Doctor has now stolen the paintings, and then bada-bing, bada-boom, he's stolen the diamond as well.
And he's waiting for Lucy.
Yeah, and she turns up in the TARDIS, if I'm not mistaken. Now, sorry, I'm going to cut you off again, because this is where the fucking myriad question marks pop up in my notes again. How the hell is she back in the TARDIS? She just left, and now all of a sudden she is in the vault.
She...
Because he has not dematerialized out of the vault and then rematerialized somewhere else.
No, she left the room where she was in with Simonson.
And then somehow got to the vault?
Yeah, but she didn't leave the palace. When you're inside the palace, you can just walk down a set of flight of stairs. You know, it's not like, you know, it's got a big metal door.
You know what?
Inside the palace.
Yeah, you know what? Anders, he was full of shit when he said that it was very closely guarded and it was a huge responsibility. Because clearly the guards, basically just YouTube and Facebook all day long, they don't give a rat's ass about security in this palace.
Yes, he was trying to chat up a pretty girl. Lucy arrives at the TARDIS.
Okay.
And anyway, they've got the Black Knot diamond.
Yeah.
They've got the statue, and then the Doctor zaps it with the screwdriver.
Yeah, and finds out that it is, in fact, the decoy that was previously on the train.
Which just leaves the two of them completely dumbfounded.
Yeah, and the only logical conclusion is that it was already stolen by, what's-her-face?
Cutscene to Karen and Anders basically admits that he's got the real diamond.
Yeah, yeah, he creamed cheesed it for the fake one.
Yes.
Nice.
So now Karen has the real Black Knot diamond, really.
Yeah.
And the big statue starts groaning into life.
Yeah. Question, dude. Did we not just say that the statue was inside the TARDIS?
The Doctor said he couldn't.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
No, the statue is outside the TARDIS. He hasn't on top of it yet.
All right.
So meanwhile, in the Gothic Cathedral control room, the Doctor... turns on his scanner and sees the statue walking.
Yeah.
So, and then he unbelievably dematerializes the TARDIS.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't this make a mockery of 30 seconds ago? Oh, well, 30 minutes ago.
Well, he's like, oh, hang on, wait, I've got this piece of paper that says Prime Directive on it. I'm just going to literally and figuratively wipe my Time Lord ass with it. It is such hypocrisy, but fabulous hypocrisy at the same time. Anyway, they race after everyone, right? They race after the kind a pseudo golem that is the statue, and then they bump into Anders.
Yeah, because Anders and Karen have been running away from the golem, or the not golem.
Yeah,
and they've run into the main hall where they hear the sound of the TARDIS materializing. So the Doc and Lucy come out of the police car and demand that, you know, come on, Karen. Hand over the real Knot diamond.
And then Anders cream cheeses again and starts fencing with the Doc.
Which is cool. So while they're fencing, Lucy chases after Karen.
Yeah, that's not the only thing that happens while they're fencing. While they're fencing, we get, I think, the first instance of, like, this classic adventure-type score. Like, adventure movie score. I'm thinking Indiana Jones, 1950s, 1960s adventure movies. I'm thinking 1950s Tarzan. That's the kind of score that's going on in the background.
I was more thinking of Errol Flynn, sort of Robin Hood era.
Okay, sure. Yeah, fine. Whatever.
definitely not Tarzan. cut to Catriona Olsen and Simonson.
Yeah, and now What's-Her-Face is arriving with them as well, totally just burns Catriona Olsen's alibi, and then we hear the statue arriving.
Basically, as if we hadn't guessed, the statue wants the diamond.
Yeah, but in case we hadn't guessed it, it actually says so as well. It goes, give me the diamond. Boom.
And, well, Karen tries to give the headhunter the diamond, and basically she wouldn't win any points at cricket. She throws it halfway across the room, doesn't quite reach the headhunter. Lucy Miller
run back and get it.
Lucy Miller runs in, baseball slides in, grabs the ball, heads towards third base, and the headhunter shoots a golem.
Yeah, lasers the shit out of it. But only stunning it for the time being, spoiler alert. And then Lucy meets a dude named...
We actually get the headhunter, who at this point has been just pissed off with Karen the entire
episode. You're right.
Oh, I know exactly what's coming up. Okay, yeah, go for it.
We get the headhunter admitting that the reason why she didn't shoot the laser when the golem first came in, it's because she didn't want to risk hitting Karen.
Really? You know what? Did you... that's not at all what I thought you were going to say.
Do you
think that's... I don't think so. I reckon she didn't blast the shit out of the golem because she figured, okay, crap, what if I hit What's-Her-Face, or I destroy the black diamond, or otherwise, like, I'm not going to fire my laser beam rifle gun thingy until I am holding on to the piece of junk that I am here to steal. And the only reason she says that to What's-Her-Face is because she doesn't want she needs What's-Her-Face to still be on her side, basically. That's my theory.
I took it completely differently.
I'm glad to hear it. The thing I thought you were going to say was that she, in classic Headhunter style, now kicks the shit out of Simonson. Knocks him out.
Oh, yeah. And then, basically, after she's done that, she punches Simonson out.
And then we meet dude who, in this story, is referred to as Georg.
Do we?
Pretty sure, because Lucy runs out. She's now got the rock. Pops out, meets this dude on... I'm imagining like a horse and carriage, and it's like the driver, the dude named Georg, which is a hideously incorrectly pronounced version of the name. And it turns out Georg is, in fact, in the headhunter's employ. He has been bribed to stop anyone holding on to the Black Diamond.
Or mind-probed, probably, as well.
Oh, very possible.
So anyway, headhunter Karen and Lucy are now in a carriage.
Yeah.
So, Simonson wakes up, right, has had enough of all the femme fatales in this episode, basically saying, right, Lucy and the headhunter, right, they're all trying this, and then the doctor turns up. Simonson has had enough of all this bullshit at this point and says, right, you're all trying to get my diamond, what the hell's going on? Then, what does he do? This prime directive piece of paper,
yeah,
which we have so far ripped into small pieces, is now literally disintegrated.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to say it's literally disintegrated just yet, because he is not done turning it into ashes and wiping his ass with it, because throughout the... What are we now? Maybe two-thirds of the way through this episode? Throughout the last third of this audiobook, he's going to stomp on it, and he's going to just render it completely extinct and null and void. He is not done shitting all over this piece of paper, dude.
He tells Simonson that the works of Claudio Tardelli alter the fabric of reality.
Yeah.
That they distort people's perceptions.
Yeah.
And, you know, Simonson says, well, I've been looking at these pictures for years and never done anything to me. And he says, well, you've only had, you know, brief exposure to them. If you'd have had a long exposure, you'd turn completely nuts crazy.
Yeah. And weirdly,
Simon says, yeah, well, I did see a golem a minute ago. Maybe you're right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm only saying this because you've also told me, a resident of Stockholm in 1898, that the pseudo golem is a... what does he say? He specifically gives him like the genetic makeup of this creature and explains what happened when the headhunter blasted it with her laser thingy.
Yeah, this is just nuts. Anyway, the golem starts moving.
Yeah, yeah.
And Simonson and the doctor hustle into the TARDIS.
Yeah, because things are totally pretty, like, they're pretty cool right now. And they're about to Indiana Jones in the TARDIS to, spoiler alert, the train.
Meanwhile, on the train, we have the bad guys, in inverted commas, of Karen and the headhunter and Lucy Miller.
Okay, this is not going to be for the benefit of the listeners, but for the benefit of you, this is what my notes now say, in all caps.
Which bit?
Yeah, because we're going to have to cut you off again. Wait just one effing second. He has a time machine. if he's gonna pop Mr. Simonson in his time machine and he's going to dematerialize and rematerialize, why can he not just travel back in time, fix this whole freaking thing?
I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to bring Doctor Who logic to you.
Damn it, do not tell me that you can't alter history or that you can't jump your own timeline, because we have encountered both.
You cannot, once you have turned up and started interacting with events, as a time traveler, go back and interact with the events where you are interacting. That is, in general, agreed upon, with the exception of
A bunch of different Doctor Who stories where they encounter themselves.
Father's Day, which nearly resulted in the destruction of the entire universe. The Last of the Time Lords and the Sound of Drums, which nearly involved the destruction of the entire universe. And the only reason that could happen was because the Master created an entire paradox machine. But in general, you can't. But, okay, sadly, it never stops us wanting to do it.
Okay.
Because it would solve... Well, the problem is, it would solve most of these plots far too easily.
Yeah, no, that is a very good point. Okay, well, I'm glad that it's at least mentioned at some point.
Yeah, Father's Day, with Christopher Eccleston and Rose. Okay. Basically, Rose nearly destroys the entire universe by doing exactly what you've just suggested.
Okay, interesting. Okay,
anyway, cool. They're on a train, and they're heading to Siberia.
Yeah, and Lucy What's-Her-Face and the Headhunter, they're having a little bit of a catch-up, and... Yeah, essentially what we learn is we get a few references to human resources. What's-Her-Face says, yeah, but you totally left me for dead outside meeting room, whatever it was. And yeah, the headhunter rescued What's-Her-Face and patched her back up and everything was fine and dandy. And they're now accomplices and like best buds. And we also learn what the headhunter plans to do, right? She wants to... Oh, wait, hang on. Wait, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Sorry. I apologize. Because what happens is she zip-zaps and unlocks the diamond, right? And out plops Claudio Tardelli.
Ah, yes.
There we go.
Claudio Tardelli.
Sorry, I got ahead of myself there.
Is played by a gentleman called Christopher Benjamin.
Ooh.
Now, Christopher Benjamin is a great person in Doctor Who lore. His first appearance was in the Jon Pertwee episode Inferno, playing Sir Keith Gold, one of the major protagonists of the story. Then, in an episode called The Talons of Wen Xiang, for Tom Baker's Doctor,
mm-hmm.
he played a character called Henry Gordon Jago, who was a supporting character and basically a de facto companion for that story, helping the Doctor solve the mystery of Wen Xiang. Then, he played... Colonel Hugh in The Unicorn and the Wasp in David Tennant era with Catherine Tate.
Oh, hate her.
Then he played Henry Gordon Jago again in a series of Big Finish audios.
Oh, awesome.
Based around Jago and Lightfoot, who are the two people from Talons of Wen Xiang.
Awesome. That is
so he is cool. Everywhere. He is everywhere, Christopher Benjamin.
Ladies and gentlemen, go to whobackwhen.com and check out the bombastic selection of screen grabs.
Meanwhile, Simonson and the Doctor and Henrik and the entire palace guard and the serving staff and a few dozen people he's picked up along the way, maybe a few train guards, possibly a street sweeper, all file out of the TARDIS. Because this prime directive is just going in the bin at this point.
Oh, yeah.
You know, basically, a dozen, two dozen, three dozen people come out of the TARDIS and at the train station.
Okay.
And no one notices.
Not at all. Well, why would they? It's a common occurrence in 1898, especially in Stockholm.
That's fair. They're very strange people, the Swedish. So, Lucy...
Couldn't agree more.
Go on.
I was going to say, we've skipped one bit. Maybe that's what you were going to say, in which case I apologize, and please feel free to just interrupt me back. But I was going to say, we find out what's been going on inside the diamond.
Yes, that's exactly where I was going.
Okay, dude, take it away.
The diamond, which isn't a diamond, really isn't a diamond. It's a zip file. It is a zip file for a universe.
Yep.
The diamond contains a self-sustaining universe, which Tardelli designed so that he could go into and be God.
Yeah, he's been lording over this little universe since when? Since the Italian Renaissance, I guess.
Yeah. So basically, he then admits that he's an alien. He was exiled to Earth, and the headhunter says, "Kablamo! I'm here to rescue you."
Yeah, and not just that, I've got a job for you.
Because she's still working in human resources. It's so cool. She's this weird intergalactic thief / recruiter.
Yeah, she apologizes because Tardelli says, "Where's my golem?"
Yeah.
And the headhunter says, "Yeah, sorry, shot it."
Yeah.
Not a problem. She explains that this emperor of a planet called Ralta wishes.
I believe the pronunciation is Ralta.
Yeah.
The Emperor Vassilar G of Ralta. I believe you are referring to.
Yes, him. Yeah. Basically, the emperor wishes a new artist.
Yeah.
And basically hired the headhunter to go and get Tardelli.
Yeah. So, mission accomplished there.
But she's on the side, agreed to sell the black diamond to this guy in Russia.
Yeah, as essentially a battery. He's going to collapse the universe and use it for power.
Yes, because the power of a collapsing universe will basically self-sustain anyone forever. But then the headhunter says she's not actually crazy because he's going to die in a few years and he's not actually going to see the benefit of doing this.
Okay.
Lucy, on the other hand, is being quite Lucy at this point and says, "Well, you've made a universe. We know it's got loads of people inside the universe. If you collapse the universe, what's going to happen to them?"
Yeah, well, ipso facto, they're going to cease to be.
Lucy's not happy with this.
Not at all. And now they're all meeting up. The goodies and the baddies are now all in the same place.
So the train pulls out of the station and the dock and team run alongside it in that sort of we need to get on the train heist movie thing. But the Doctor, from scene number one, remembers how fast this train can go, because that was the first thing he mentioned in the episode.
Yeah.
But that it takes a while to accelerate to it. And basically, he gets on board the train, he helps Simonson on board the train, but the rest of the team, so Anders, the guards, the cleaning staff, the road sweepers that he brought in the TARDIS, are all still at the station. So we now
need to tell people about the magical voyage they've just undertaken.
And if the Doctor's anything like he normally is, he's forgot to lock the door.
Yeah.
But what they do see is the golem turns up, because, that's not going to go down well in 1890s Sweden at all.
That's what she said.
Meanwhile, back on the train.
Yeah, now they're all meeting, right?
Now they're all getting towards together. Tardelli gets told that the Doctor's on board the train, and he goes a little bit apeshit.
And he introduces himself to Simonson. And Simonson basically goes, holy shitballs, you are not at all the kind of man I expected you to be. And when he finds out about the universe, he's utterly appalled that someone would just create a world, lord over it, and then be however prepared to just do away with it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's a good scene.
It's a great scene.
It's absolutely a great scene. And then the golem turns up.
Lucy pops in and goes, "Hey, didn't you guys say that the Guardian was here to protect the universe at any cost?" And then the Doctor jumps in and goes, "Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, Guardian, what's more important to you, Tardelli or the universe? Because these dudes and dudettes, they are going to kill everyone who's living in that little universe inside the Black Diamond that isn't a diamond. But Tardelli, he's totally fine. Where do you stand?" And the Guardian goes, "Give me the diamond."
And then the headhunter shoots. Was it headhunter? No, Karen. Sorry, shoots the golem with the laser.
Yeah.
But he's totally borged now.
Oh, so that is literally my note. Holy shitballs. My note is, turns out the Guardian has Borg adaptive armor.
Yes, so it's totally borged, and it is now, laser proof.
Nice one, dude. Great minds.
And
we get the most hilarious fight scene ever.
And, Lucy's doing what she always does to anyone with a gun. She goes straight at the gun and disarms them. And then, Karen's captured, Tardelli's captured, the Doctor gives Simonson a laser.
Dude, really sorry. There is something we need to mention here, because while they're having their fight, the reason this fight is the most hilarious fight scene so far anyway, on Doctor Who, for me anyway, is there's another passenger. Their fight goes through the dining cart, and there is a passenger there, some really posh dude, who's having his dinner, his soup and glass of wine,
And while they're fighting around him, he produces wonderful little comments. Like, he goes, waiter, there are bits of the roof in my wine. When Lucy and What's-Her-Face are fighting, he says something like, ladies, it's terribly gauche to be brawling in this manner. Like, it is fantastically fun.
Oh, it is. It is very good fun. And, you know, you have this while the golem is trying to get to the diamond, so it's hitting through the roof. You've got Lucy doing martial arts. You've got the headhunter and Lucy being snarky at each other. You have, you know, Lucy kicking, punching, slapping the headhunter. And then the Doctor turns up to stop the catfight.
Yeah, more or less. Has the Doctor at this point already spoken to the Guardian?
He now turns around to the Guardian and goes, right, you want to protect the people inside the diamond.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Because the people in the diamond will never truly be safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Cutscene back to Tardelli and Simonson, who are, well, Simonson, Tardelli is impressed that Simonson has so much of Tardelli's work.
Yeah.
And he now hears about photography. The Doc turns back up at this point and says, right, your magical mind-bending powers don't work on photographs, only work on reality. But guess what? We're going to hand wave that entire problem away, because let's talk about this diamond.
Yeah. What he has done is he has told the Guardian to fracture it, because the only way to save the people inside is to let them out. So he has fractured it, and the universe is going to expand out of it, right? Out of this diamond. And in doing so, will kill everyone. And the only way to stop that from happening is if Tardelli, whose name, by the way, is not Tardelli, if he takes that universe, plonks it somewhere in between dimensions, and allows it to expand there instead.
This is the because we didn't hear most of this conversation about how the Doctor and, you know, the Golem figured this out. It is literally a deus ex machina at this point.
Oh, yeah.
But Tardelli says, yeah, okay, border that place anyway.
Yeah, before he says that, though, there's a great line.
I don't know, we haven't had enough McGann. Should we soundbite that?
Yeah, let's soundbite it. Yeah. Soundbite.
Soundbite.
You idiot!
Well, idiot would imply I've done something stupid.
Classic McGann. Classic. So, yeah, anyway, now Tardelli needs to dump the universe between dimensions.
Which he does.
Yeah, which he does, and we get, like, the farewell scenes now.
And Karen grabs the gun, and Karen basically steals Tardelli off, because they still want to take Tardelli to the
Vasilogy of Rauta.
That's the one. Meanwhile, we cut scene to Lucy and Catriona Olsen. Lucy has basically bondaged up the headhunter and heading back towards the dock, and Lucy and the headhunter meet Karen and Tardelli.
Yeah, we get this weird farewell scene. Like, they go, yeah, okay, dudes, don't worry about it. We've got a gun. It's totally cool. We're going to take Tardelli. We're going to take him off to Vasilogy of Rauta. They do. Then we get the farewell scene between Doc and Simonson, and the Guardian pops up, like, very gently taps on a window or a glass door, and the farewell scene here is Simonson goes, well, there are rumors of stone trolls living in the suburbs of Stockholm, basically. Why don't you go there? The Guardian goes, thank you very much, absconds. And then we get the resolution of Tardelli, but we get that twixt Doc and Lucy.
And basically, the Emperor Vassilar of Rauta. Oh, I'm sorry, I think I pronounced that wrongly, didn't I?
I believe it's Rauta.
When he gets sick of the people he hires, he takes them out and eats them in front of his people.
Because he does get bored of his artists very quickly. So this is an inevitability. What? The Doctor's cool with this? I know.
Well, I think he's given up.
I know that Tardelli's a total galactic douchebag, but I mean, come on, he is literally just going, oh, it's totally cool. We can let him go and be court artists for Vassilar G, but I'm okay with him being eaten alive on some fucking balcony?
Yeah, he's having a bit of double standards at this point.
Wait, yeah? Anyway. All right, so we're on the train, still speeding, and we get what, in my opinion, is a very abrupt ending.
Yeah, they go to dinner.
And the only sort of nice thing about this ending is that the posh dude who was making fun comments during the fight scene, he's there, and he basically just concurs. He goes, that's a spiffing idea. I could eat.
And then it ends.
And And that's it. That's the end of the story.
Reviews.
Reviews.
You first.
Me first?
Well, why not?
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. All right, check it out. I was thoroughly intoxicated by this story. I loved it. I thought it was a fantastic, stupendous adventure story, very much along the lines of, like, heist movies, but with a fun twist. It was like the Ocean's 11 meets the Great Train Robbery meets whatever, something, Thomas Crown Affair, classic Thomas Crown Affair. Like, it was a great, great episode. It had that adventure sense that you get from Indiana Jones movies, from like early Spielberg movies. It had thrills, it had chills, it had some fun jokes, and those are all the positives. Oh, by the way, it also has a fantastic plot. Like, in general, it has a great plot. Those are the positives. Oh, sorry, wait, there's another one. It has Catriona Olsen. Great. Fantastic. Here are the negatives. Much of the plot does not make sense. Mainly, I'm speaking about the hypocrisy of when to use technology, because a large portion of the resolution of this episode, the way that they handle the problems, is by using technology that at the same time is the cause of the problem in the first place. They can't use technology, which is why they have to solve this problem, but in order to solve this problem, no problem, we'll just use technology. That to me is a little bit of a drawback. Another drawback, there is nowhere near enough McGann in this. I love McGann as the Doctor. I want much more Doctor banter. I love it when the Doctor and Lucy interact with each other, and even though the Headhunter and What's-Her-Face, even though they have a fantastic rapport, I don't think it comes anywhere near any kind of rapport that you get between the Doctor and insert character here, basically. That being said, I kind of don't give a shit. I love this story. I'm only just now deciding what to give this. I'm giving it a 4.5. I'm giving it a 4.5. Great adventure, great fun, and it would also be very well suited as an introduction to the audiobooks. Despite the Headhunter having appeared previously, despite Karen being referred to in previous episodes, this would be a great one to showcase to your friends.
Okay. I've not put it at a 4.5, and that's not, you know, disparaging this story in any point.
Okay.
Because, like you said a couple of weeks ago, starting to look back at relative scoring of what you've given to other things, and I'm thinking, is this Human Resources? No. Is this Blood of the Daleks? No. Is this Max Warp? Almost. you've scored this slightly higher than I have.
Okay.
But I think I enjoyed it just as much.
All right.
Thank God Catriona Olsen's back and doing a full episode, because she was in Skull of Sobek for all of 5 seconds and it was rubbish. She was in Phobos for all of 5 seconds and it was rubbish. I'm getting that the how good an episode is in direct
relationship
to how much Catriona Olsen is in the episode.
Yeah.
We've got the Davis factor, we've now got the Catriona factor.
Mm.
This is a vehicle to bring back, you know, Karen the Headhunter, and it is not the last we've seen of them. They will be back again.
I imagine so.
A sci-fi historical, it's a good one. It's a romp. It's a good romp. It's got golems and pocket dimensions. It's got, you know, a few great actors. It's a little bit Deus Ex Machina in the ending. There's a new Who story called The Power of Three, which is for 41 minutes, brilliant. Then you manage to halve the score you give for the episode by the remaining 2 minutes, because the ending ruins the episode. Even though it's a brilliant episode, the ending physically ruins it. This isn't quite that level of bad, but I feel that the ending wasn't as good. This should have been a two-parter, and it should have been more fleshed out, because the heist movie theme is the best bit of this. The stealing of stuff on board the train, the stealing of stuff on board, in the palace. They're both brilliant bits of the episode. And then you get to the resolution and the Tardelli bit, and it falls a little bit from the tree at this point.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that for 4/5 of the episode, it's very good. The last fifth isn't. So I'm going to give it a 3.9 out of 5.
Holy shitballs.
And that's only because up until the last 1/5, it was about a 4.3, 4.4 maybe. But the last fifth, I think, was either too rushed or it just didn't feel like it fit in properly. You have Christopher Benjamin, who is playing Tardelli. He is, you know, he will go on to do a lot of audiobooks. He has been in Doctor Who innumerate times. He is a great actor, and he's not given that much to do as Tardelli. Tardelli's probably one of the least number, you know, the least number of lines in the story. And I think it's either the ending was too rushed, the ending wasn't good enough, or this should have been a two-parter. So, but did I enjoy it? Yes. Do I think it could have been better? Yes. Do I think it deserves to be in the same bracket that I've put Brave New Town, Human Resources, Blood of the Daleks, and Max Warp? No. Therefore, it has to be less than a 4. So it's a 3.9.
Fair enough. No, you're entitled to your opinion. I've got to say, the adventure aspect of this was great to me. And I think, in a way, it's a different kind of episode to Human Resources. Human Resources, in many ways, is a superior episode, but or audiobook, but it's a serious story, whereas this is more of an Indiana Jonesy kind of comical episode. It's a comical adventure. And I disagree with what you said in terms of Tardelli not appearing enough in it. To me, this is more a story of Headhunter versus Doctor, What's-Her-Face versus Lucy. And in that sense, it comes to fruition, whereas Tardelli is just sort of this... He's the reason they're fighting, but the story is about the fight itself.
Would I recommend someone listen to it? Yes.
Excellent. So would I.
So, next week, The Zygon Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah.
It is a sequel to Don't Turn Off Right Now, Horror of Glam Rock. But it's sequel in the same way that Wrath of Khan was a sequel to the motion picture. Trust me, it's a different beast entirely.
Yeah, yeah. And worth listening to.
Oh, next week's listen to us, then listen to that. You won't regret it. Plus, you're really going to need to listen to The Zygon Who Fell to Earth for things coming up. So, we will see you next week.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's something that is definitely worth ingesting. Much like, I believe, your tweets, sir. People who are not the wonderful gentleman I am currently talking to, you need to follow JD on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K. While you're at it, follow me. I am at Ponkin. That's Ponkin with, you know how to spell that. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, review, check us out on the website, whobackwhen.com, and please do like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen.
I don't have a catchphrase. Goodbye.
Be rad and excellent to each other. Ciao.
Who back when?